Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planting leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
Yeah, the timing is really, the church really, you know, kind of dictates the timing. Or I mean, they're usually coming to us saying we need a first impression pastor, whatever the position is.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's, but sometimes, I mean, we've had times where they come to us and it's like, that may be what you think you need, but let's talk about it. We need to kind of dig into it because that's probably not the next best hire for you guys and get a chance to have a conversation about that. But short answer is, yeah, systems and processes and behind kind of our work, probably too much to get into here, but behind how we go into it and just try to find the best match. And one thing is all of the, my whole team, they've all sat in the seat, so they've all been pastors. They've all hired a bunch of people in local church ministry, and that really gives them a.
So what about this one? Because I know I'm a little familiar with Vanderbloom. I've met him a couple of times, and he actually used it for a previous organization that I used to be a part of. So from my understanding, an individual says, okay, hey, here's my resume. Here's the position I'm looking for. I'm a teacher. I want to lead. Here's who I think I am, or here's the position that I want. And so then ultimately you take that, and then I don't know from that point forward, but I'm assuming you take what they're giving you the resume for, and then you look for churches that are looking for that person. But in my experience, many times the people who turn in the resumes and say, this is who I think I am, aren't really that person.
Sure.
So how do you guys determine, like, or how do you have those conversations of like, hey man, I know you want to be a campus pastor, and I know you want to teach, and I know you want to be a multi-site church, but the reality behind it is, based off of our time with you, you would be a much better fit for being a small groups pastor, or a much better fit for being a first impressions kind
yeah.
of somebody.
So I would say one little twist on that is, so we don't work directly with people looking for jobs. We work with churches to fill positions. So it's a little bit of a nuance. There are some organizations that if you're looking for a job, you go to them and they help you find a job. We don't do that. We work with churches to fill positions. So the only candidates we talk to are people interested in the position that we are supporting or promoting for that specific church. And therefore, then it's a vetting, weeding, filtering process to find the best match for them. And so we might get 400, often, you know, get 400 interested people resumes for a position, and then we have to work that down and get it down to the, top few candidates for that church. So a little bit of difference there. I'll move on. Keep asking questions if you have any. Third thing that I've learned in this world, and this might surprise you too because of what I do, but that resumes are pretty much worthless. Now, I see hundreds of resumes a month, right? So I think we have almost 40,000 resumes right now sitting in our database. So look at a lot of them, but they're pretty much worthless to help figure out, is there a match between this person and the position that needing to be filled. So this happened to me once where I had a friend asking me if I take a look at his resume, and I read his resume and I thought, my goodness, I'd hire this person in a second. But the problem was I knew my friend, and I knew that I wouldn't hire him ever because of work ethic and because of history and experience and whatever. So resumes, obviously, they're made to, in most cases, they reflect a shinier object than maybe what is there, right? So resumes, my problem with resumes is almost all of them, and people are getting better with these, but almost all of them contain just two pieces of information. They can't contain the education that the person had and the jobs that where they worked. That's about all you get from a resume. And those two are important. That's important pieces of information, but they're pretty much very far down on the list. I'm more concerned with and feel like it's more important to look at skills, you know, skill sets, not necessarily just the positions they've held, but the skill sets. Have they developed aptitude for certain tasks? You know, leadership. Do they have leadership capacity? Not just what have they led, what have they grown, but do they have the capacity to go beyond that, or were they kind of at their lid there? Their passion, you know, does this role, this specific role, we're hiring for a youth pastor, does that make their heart beat fast? Or is it just like, they've done youth and they know they can do youth, they have the experience for youth, but that doesn't really make their heart beat fast. Their heart for the organization. Now, when I'm talking to someone who doesn't know that much about First Church of Huntington Beach, so I may have to merge that so that they understand the vision, the mission, the values, kind of the heart of that church. But ultimately, we're trying to get at what is their heart? You know, do they have a heart for that organization? When it gets down to the end of the process and you're like ready to offer them the position, you want to be at a place where they're like, you know what? I'd do that. I mean, I just do it for anything. And they don't really mean it because they wouldn't do it for nothing. But they're like, that's where I see my family. That's where I see my life. And that's where you want to get them. So that's huge. Resumes can be worthless. The fourth one is that chemistry is crucial in the hiring. Yes, sir.
Quick question. When you're at Granger, you had to hire from outside the major role. And I agree, sometimes resumes are not the deepest. Is there a tool that you use, kind of like the DISC assessments? What would you recommend to take a deeper dive?
I don't know that I recommend one over the other. So we would use the DISC or StrengthFinders often. And with the churches I work with now, they all kind of have different tools that they rely on. I think it's a really good idea to have eight that you're kind of using broadly across your staff and looking at new people coming in as well, just so you can kind of see where they fit, what you're going to be dealing with. Sometimes so we use one at Vanderbilt and for our staff called Insights, I think it's called Discovery or Discovery Insights, something like that. And it's really helpful when you bring someone in. We brought someone in last week who just joined our staff and kind of had her go through this inventory. And then you kind of see, she's got a very similar skill set, personality, whatever, to someone else on our staff. And so it gives us a good insight on kind of what we're working with. I don't like to rely on them too much, and I think churches get messed up if they make hiring decisions based on the results of the inventory test. And work with some churches that do that, where it's like, man, they love the person, they interviewed well, they do the test, and it's like, nope, we can't hire them because they didn't score well. Well, to me, they're putting way too much stock in that inventory test because they, you know, you do need to include gut and discernment and prayer and all of that in that decision as well. Fourth is chemistry is crucial. Just real quick on this, I tend to think that chemistry is more important than skills. I can get someone skill training. I can get someone. Chemistry for me is more important than education degrees. I can get them the education once they're on the team and the experience. But the chemistry is huge. You have to be able to play well in the sandbox with the other people that are on the playground with you. And so it's really huge. When the organization gets really large, they don't have to have great chemistry with everyone on staff. If you're the senior pastor and let's say you have 20 on staff, and this person is maybe two levels below you, it's not the person you'll go hang out with or go have drinks with, but they have to have chemistry with the people surrounding them, people they're working on their team. I heard Hybels talk about chemistry and try to define it once, and he said, here's how you know if you have good chemistry. He says, right now if your phone buzzes and, you know, Joe's name shows up, if your immediate reaction is, or again, or, you know, or you see him come down the hallway and you're darting in the side rooms because you just don't want to get another conversation right now. I mean, that's probably a good sign that you don't have great chemistry, that something's going on there. Maybe it's a forgiveness or a conflict thing you got to push through. Maybe it's not a chemistry issue, but a lot of times it's a chemistry issue. It's just not working. It's just not fitting. Fifth one is that you can't train character. This is probably pretty basic for you guys, but you can't train character. This is hard sometimes for church leaders because we're in the, you know, so-called business of life transformation, of redemption. And so in our churches, we obviously want people that come in without character or with poor character because we want to see, you know, the life-changing power of Jesus to transform their life. But when it's talking about staff members, people that are going to either be leading or be perceived as the leaders, even if it's a receptionist or someone that's mowing your lawn, there's a sense that people look to them as staff, they look to them as leaders. And so it's really important that there's a certain a level of character that you don't have time to work on that. The church is too important to put at risk you know, being derailed because someone has a moral lapse, and then you get sidetracked for weeks or months trying to deal with that issue because of all the damage that was inflicted because of it.
Real quick, what are some tools or some ways or questions or some ways to define character before in the individual before you would hire them? I mean, obviously, you can kind of ask them, like, hey, are you a person of character? And most of the people will say, yeah, and then you kind of dig into, like, okay, well, you know, give me some strengths and weaknesses, give me some places where some areas of failure, things that you've done wrong. And then in transparency, a lot of times you can define that, but what would go beyond?
I would say it's real important, the reference calls. Not only the reference names and contact information they provide you, but the ones that are beyond that as well. So I think you can dig into that with references. And anytime you find something that's just like a little bit of a, you know, it's even just a yellow flag, then I'd circle back with the candidate that you're looking at and just kind of poke on that issue a little bit and find out, you know, what else is there, kind of what's behind that. And you're not looking necessarily to disqualify them, because in some cases it may be a character issue they've been working on for years and made huge progress on, and you just need to be there to be able to support them, continue to support them in that issue that they're struggling with. I find like the three areas that tend to come up the most are words, money, and sex. So it's either issue with their tongue and kind of not being able to hold back with their, you know, emotion. I had a audio technician on my staff once that twice had just this flare-up anger. One time he threw a table across the stage, another time he yelled at a few volunteers. He lasted about 4 weeks, I think. Well, he had a character issue. We didn't catch it when he came in, and, you know, it was just percolating up when he got squeezed. So words are big. Money, you know, people that are mesmerized by money. And in church world, you know, with event registrations and, you know, Bible study books and bookstores and coffee cafes and whatever, you're dealing with money in most cases. So you need to have people that have character in that issue. And then, you know, sex is a big one, you know, where it seems like there's not another week you don't see something in social media about a church leader that's fallen in that area. So, I have found that in many cases, I can't say most, and this is not scientific, but in many cases, if someone has fallen in an area once, there's a much higher chance that they're going to fall in that area again. So it doesn't mean you shouldn't hire them, but you should just go in with your eyes wide open and make sure that you're supporting them well, that that they're in an environment of encouragement, accountability, and there's someone that's focused on that. There's, you know, you can ask a ton of questions up front. So, you know, sometimes when there's a moral failure, it's like, what did we get wrong, you know, in the hiring process? Well, sometimes you didn't get anything wrong. You know, maybe it's a culture issue. Maybe it's less about we got something wrong in the hiring. Maybe it's more about, well, we just, our culture is such an environment, we're working at such a high pace that we're squeezing people way too hard and they don't have time with their families, and this person's character just got eroded because of the pace. Sometimes it's just their own personal choices, right? So when I'm in the hiring on the front end process, if someone's self discloses an issue, I'm much less concerned about it than if someone doesn't. Working with a candidate a couple months ago and getting ready to present them to a church as a youth pastor candidate, and, you know, we're just Googling trying to find something, and found a news article about an issue that happened with this guy a few years prior that he hadn't brought up. You know, he had vaguely, kind of in one sentence in his questionnaire, had referred to something that happened, but he didn't bring it up. And it was a huge issue, a huge red flag for me, that, you know, he had to know that would be found eventually because it was out there in the World Wide Web. It's a news article. But he didn't bring it up. So I think, you know, someone that's self-disclosing, I hired a campus pastor a few years back, and as we're hiring him, he said, you need to know I got fired from one of my jobs. And here's what happened. Here's what I was accused of. Here's the portions of it I did that was accurate in the accusations. And here's two or three people you can talk to that know the whole story. And so it was great. It's like, totally get that. Talked to the references. Felt like we got a good, you know, feel of the story. Had a good sense of how we could support that person going forward. So it's just real important to kind of focus on on, you know, whatever you can in those regards when they're coming in. When they do fall, and this will happen if you're a young church and you're like, you know, by God's grace, we haven't had anyone with a moral failure yet. For us, it took 16 years before that happened. It eventually will happen. For the life of the church, people are human, and it will happen. Do everything you can to restore them. Sometimes we get confused and think, well, that means they have to stay on staff for us to restore them. That's not necessarily true, and if it's a pastoral role, usually not true. And sometimes we have our employer hat and our pastor hat. And you talk very specifically about that when we're talking to the individual. Right now I have my employer hat on, and that means that you can't stay on my team because of the choices you made. But let me put my pastor hat on and tell you how we're going to care for you and your family and get you guys through this. So really focus on both of those. Comments, questions? All right, number six on things I've learned related to hiring. Stalk your potential hires. Unashamedly stalk them. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, blogs, whatever. These social networking tools, which are really quite new, right? In the last 10, 12 years we've had these available. And they've changed everything and really given the advantage to the potential employer when it comes to hiring staff. And it's because everything that you tweet, post, put out there is available. Seth Godin says Google never forgets, right? It's just, it's all out there. There was a report I read recently from the University of Evansville, and they said that employers, companies, corporate employers, are turning more and more to the internet to screen applicants. And beyond that, they found that employers were able to determine with a surprising level of accuracy personality traits and indicators that could predict future job performance. And they said that more so than resumes or interviews, what they were able to determine by just looking at what was in social media from that individual could determine future job performance, which is pretty amazing. And it's true. When I was at Granger, we would have a process where we'd have, you know, one of our millennials on staff that knew social media really well, and they would just kind of, we'd say, hey, go see what you can find out about this person. We're not looking for anything that other people say about them. That's slander, that's gossip, not interested in that. But just stuff that they put out themselves. I like to look through, you know, picture albums, just see what do they deem worthy of putting out there, what they post as far as photography goes. I like to see their posts, their status updates, kind of what's hot on their mind, what they're thinking about, what they're talking about. I like to click on articles that they find interesting just to see kind of, okay, how do they think? What's going on a little bit in their mind? What they say about their spouses or kids. I had a staff member on our team once, and my wife at one point turned to me and said, you know what? He, on Facebook, he talks a ton about his kids. He never talks about his wife ever. And we're like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And you know, I thought, well, maybe she doesn't let him. Maybe she says, don't ever talk about me on Facebook. But it was about 6 months later that his marriage failed. And so something was going on there. We're able to kind of, if we could have seen that ahead of time. One thing I love when I'm looking at future hires to see how they treat people that they disagree with. You know, social media and the online world, there's so much about, you know, religious arguments, political arguments, arguments about how we raise our kids and whether you spank or you don't and all that kind of stuff. So regardless of what their views on all that stuff is, how do they treat the people that have the opposite view? Do they treat them with love and with grace? Are they kind of like just in your face? Because it's going to be a good indication of how they treat people in real life, too, in personal interactions. I like to see what they think is funny. You know, is their sense of humor online always kind of crass and a little bit inappropriate, which just shows a lack of discernment? Find out about their interests. That tells you a lot about chemistry. What movies do they like? What books do they read? Where they go on vacation? What sports? You know, all that kind of stuff. And you know, you think about all that, and it maybe makes you feel a little bit weird because it's like that just feels like I'm stalking them, and it's absolutely true. You are stalking them, and you should do it. My kids call—they don't use the word stalking; they call it creeping. They said, "Dad, you're creeping." Well, yeah, it's out there, and you should absolutely do it. You know, when I go to buy a car, I order the Carfax report. I do my due diligence. You know, it's like, okay, has this car been in an accident? Has it been in a flood? Does it have a clean title? I look through the maintenance records. Well, it's a car, right? It's a piece, an object that's $6,000 or $10,000 or something like that that we're going to drive for a few years and be done with. With a staff member, we're going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars potentially if they stay with us for a long time. And so it's huge and it's important. And the gravity of if it goes bad is much bigger than if a car goes bad, right? So think about that. It also probably should be said, watch what you put out there online. When you are wounded and hurt and rightfully have a place to say something, be careful what you put out there. When we're talking to candidates who have kind of left a place and it wasn't a good leave, they got fired or they quit or something went bad, we're really focused in on paying attention on kind of, is that wound still really fresh? Are they talking, are they throwing mud at the prior church, the prior pastor, the prior leaders? Because we're probably going to look past them if that's the case. So be careful what you put out there too. Comments or questions on that, on the whole issue of stalking future employees? Cool. Number 7 is make your hellos long and your goodbyes fast. Your hellos long and your goodbyes fast. So on the front side, you can't interview too much, ask too many questions. I used to say you can't take too long in the interviewing process, although I've seen some people take way too long in the interviewing process now. So, but I would say as a church, as you're sitting there, stretch it out as long as you need to in order to get the answers that you need to get to be 100% comfortable in your decision. But on the other end, on the goodbye, it's like this isn't working. We know it's not working. It needs to be really swift. There's a few things that happen when you decide to part ways, whether you fire someone or they come in and say, you know what, guys just lead me somewhere else. And so say this is October, for early October. I think, boy, if I could just stay till November 15th or so and then kind of, you pay them as long as you want, I would just have their last day really soon. A couple of things that happen. When someone's leaving, and especially in the church world, this doesn't happen so much in other places, but in the church world, when someone is leaving your staff, there's a sense from people in the church that you always have people in your church, a core or a percentage that are disgruntled, that don't like the direction, that are the ones that are complaining or whatever. Those people are going to rise up and attach themselves like a leech to the person who you just fired or who just decided to terminate or quit. Because they think that person probably shares whatever their issues are. And so they instantly become a lightning rod for all the unhappy people in the church. The other thing that happens is they get a little bit freer with their tongue and less discerning a lot of times because they are leaving, because they are they don't have the incentive of a paycheck anymore, right? So unfortunately or unfortunately, those kind of things happen. So be real careful about having those separations too long. What I would do is typically, if in the best of situations, you know, is maybe like Tony Morgan. Some of you know Tony Morgan, so he worked for me for 8 years and then decided to move on. So Tony and I had talked about long hellos and quick goodbyes. We taught that together many, many times. And so when it got down to it, it was like, this just needs to be quick. And he's like, you're right, it does. So we set it for, and his was like the best of leaves. There was no animosity or whatever. Close families, relationships. And so we set it for, it was like a week and a half. And we got about 4 days into it and both looked at each other and said, that was way too long. We should have made that quicker. Because, you know, quickly after someone has decided they're not going to be with you anymore, or you've decided they're not going to be with you anymore, their brain is on to the next thing. I mean, they're ready to dream and envision whatever they're going to next. And so we need to free them up to do that. Also, meetings happen in the season when they're still on staff that they can't be a part of. Anything that's future-oriented, they can't be a part of anymore, that conversation with any kind of authenticity. So it's really important. Again, pay them as long as you like. Be generous, especially. Now, if someone comes and they quit and they're taking another job, you're not necessarily paying them severance. But if someone is, if you fired them, or in that case, I try to be as generous as possible. Even if they screwed up, you know, I try to still be generous because there's oftentimes a family behind them that are in your church that you care and love about. So be as generous as you can on paying, extending their health insurance, whatever you need to do. But as far as they're like in the office, staff position, have the title, have the office, make that as quick as possible. Yeah, go ahead.
Question on that. What does that
mean? Yeah, if it's obvious to me and to them that this was a mutual thing, even though they may have come in and said, hey, I'm leaving, I'll do what we can to help them. And as far as the tenure thing, not so much on the length of the severance. We would typically, it was a little bit more kind of on family need, so we would typically, like probably a typical thing if we let someone go would be 3 months, and we would extend that maybe a little bit longer if there were certain financial situations or family situations, or we would shorten it up, and almost all the times we would say 3 months or until you find a full-time job, whichever sooner. So if they get full-time employed, and we're not there to make them rich, right? So we just want to be able to end that as quick as we can if they get another job. Yeah.
When you have extended breaks like that to an employee exiting, and unfortunately they receive it, but they maybe are saying things that are inappropriate amongst the body, how have you addressed that?
Yeah, great question. So we always used we call it a staff release agreement. And so the agreement would be, would basically say, and I would verbalize this to them in the meeting, would say, you know, there's one of two ways we can go with this, both of us. We can take the high road or we can take the low road. And then I had to picture, here's what the high road looks like. You know, there's issues you undoubtedly have about me or the church, and there's issues that I undoubtedly have about you and your employment. So the high road means we're not going to be talking about those outside this room. And the high road means that you're going to be supporting the leadership and that we're not going to be hearing stories back about you bad-mouthing the leaders or the church or the philosophy or whatever. The low road looks like, and then kind of paint that out as well. And this staff release agreement and the severance is just dependent on you taking the high road. And so we'll support you in that, and we love you guys. And so we would, and haven't signed that. It's probably not, legally, we would never enforce it. We never take them to court or anything based on them signing this. We never had to pull someone's severance. And there were sometimes like things happened in that 6 or 8 or 12 weeks or whatever, and we just were like, just call them and say, hey, these are the kind of things. This isn't helpful. We never pulled any severance. But we did have the conversation up front. Very clearly. I remember in one case, we had to lay off staff. It was a terrible time, season. It was right at the beginning of the financial crisis. We had to lay off 8 staff. And we had the staff release agreement. We paid them all for 3 months. And one of the gals, at day 91, she wrote this flaming blog, about the church and whatever. So it was out there for about a half a day, and then it was gone. And so, I just knew she was probably feeling guilty about it, or someone talked to her. But it was, she held up her end of the deal for 90 days. So, but those things happen. Those conversations are just stinking tough. I mean, in those conversations, there's no way about it. I always try to give more grace. There's emotions that fly around when someone's leaving, even on the best of situations. There's emotions that fly around, and that people can say things they didn't really mean in the course of that. And so I try to give some grace for that. Some space for that, it's, they said something in anger, and they didn't, it's like, kind of tackle that, but don't penalize them for it, unless it's a common behavior, and it's just non-ending. Any other thoughts, questions? Yeah. Those are the hardest ones. Like a moral failure is much easier to deal with. It's terrible. It's much easier to deal with from a staff standpoint, because everyone, they did that, they can't stay on staff, and so people... Not everyone says that, but most people will like agree with you on that. With attitude and chemistry, it's really hard because it's so subjective. You can't talk about it out loud. You can't talk to the church about this is why this person can no longer be on staff. But you can have pretty straight conversations with that individual. I like Jack Welch has this, the diagram he uses. And you said, performance, and that would be like one scale. Where if they're way down here on the performance scale, then there's, they're great. Like, let's say they're the youth pastor, and there's more kids coming all the time, and they're in small groups, and everything that you want to happen in youth ministry is happening. And then this would be the
I like to call it like DNA or attitude, values, you know, this scale here. So if they're high on this scale, then they get it. They totally get us as a church. They understand. I mean, if you had a guest come in, you wouldn't hesitate to put them with someone who's high on this scale because they get it. They can communicate with passion, the heart, and the vision. You know, you cut them, they bleed the DNA of the church. So, you know, you can have people in different quadrants of this. So you can have someone who is really poor performance and really poor on DNA and attitude and values. And that one, obviously, it's a no-brainer. That person has to be let go. If you know for sure they're not performing and they have a stinky attitude. Sometimes they have a really great attitude and DNA and values and whatever, but they're just not great performers. And Jack Welch would say these people you either try to retrain or, in his world, he would try to transfer them. It'd be like the Jim Collins wrong seat on the bus, get them in the right seat on the bus. Sometimes in small church settings, a lot of times, we don't have any place to transfer them to because there's not that many positions, right? So sometimes in a transfer means you're transferring them from a staff position to a volunteer position if you can't get the performance up. And then they're a great performer, but they're really poor attitude and values, and these are the people you're talking about. And these would be the ones that you'd have a short conversation. I think Hybels called this the 30-day conversation. Basically, you're communicating in that this can't stay. This can't be this. Something has to change. Yours might be 60 days. Whatever it is, a specific timeline where you're having the conversation, you're saying these are the things that aren't working. It's your attitude with some specifics. When you had this conversation, when you said this here, when you communicated this, when you told your team this, those things can't happen anymore. And so that has to change. And so you're saying, these things need to change in the next whatever, 30 days, 60 days, or we're going to get together again in 4 months and talk about this. And the next conversation, if these things haven't changed, is going to be a conversation about transitioning you off the team.
Sorry, so what is that? That's low performance?
This would be high performance. So they're doing everything they could, but they've got a low on DNA and attitude. Yeah. And then these would be the people in Jack Welch's world. He would say, give them fat bonus checks, send them on, expensive vacations, give them the gold watch, reward in some ways. In our world, it's the people that maybe are getting more time and attention from the leaders, the people that maybe we're taking to a conference because, man, they're doing awesome, and so we're taking them along to get them more training because that's what they desire and that's what they want. We're spending some more time with them because they're really the core of our leadership team. So. But the ones in the lower right corner are probably the most difficult ones to deal with. But I think just like if their performance was low, just find tangible things. So I went through this with a children's director a few years ago who had been great for, she was with me for 11 years, and she'd been great for probably 8 years. And we moved quickly when she came, we probably had 400 kids. And when she, and then it grew to a place we had like 1,000 or 1,100 kids. And so it just outgrew her capacity. So it was a little bit performance, but bigger than that was just this toxic attitude coming from, and I never saw it firsthand. I mean, anytime I was with her, she was splendid. But I kept hearing about it. And so having to dig into it a little bit and then finding out that it was there, that there was this toxic attitude brewing. And it was going down into her team and, things like, this church doesn't value children's ministry. And we had just spent like $3 million on a children's facility. So there were things like that that just didn't make any sense. And we were hearing that. It's like, where are you getting that? And it just kind of kept pointing back to her. And so I had to have conversations with her. And so I sat down with her and outlined kind of, I think it was 11 things that are true of directors at the church. So if you're a director level staff member at this church, these 11 things, and these weren't new to her. These were values on our staff. And I asked her to go and rank herself, A, B, or C. A, hitting the ball out of the park on this. B, doing okay. C, this has to change. And she ranked herself like areas with a C. So she kind of self-diagnosed herself, and I ranked her as well, and we talked about the answers. And then I said, okay, on these Cs, this has to change. And I think it was like a 3-month period, this has to change.
and we had conversations about once a month during that season, and ultimately led with her moving off staff. But it was a tough conversation, but it was tangible. Even though it was attitude, it was still tangible. Any other thoughts, comments, questions? You have to be picky with volunteers, in my opinion. And I think this diagram and the quick goodbyes, I mean, a lot of that, I think, transfers over to firing volunteers when you need to. Now, with volunteers, I think you have more options to do this, to transfer, because you have 300 volunteer positions. So you've got places it's like, okay, this isn't working. Like, performance is down. Why is performance down? Well, performance is down because you just had a baby, and you can't really live up to the expectations of this specific position. So let's move you over to a position that requires less time, or you don't have to be at so many extra activities. So sometimes you can poke at that. But when it comes to attitude, to alignment, in fact, one of the ones we're going to talk about here is related to alignment. You know, with alignment, and you know when it's true with a volunteer and with a staff person, but you have, like, you know, the whole church is going in a certain direction, and your mission, your vision, your values, you know, the belief, everything, it's like the church is going that way. And for every church that's represented in this room, this arrow would be pointing in a slightly different direction, because we're all different, and it's, you know, so this isn't like a right or wrong, like this is gospel that way and everything else is not. This is just like, no, this is our church has chosen to focus on single adults because we have a huge number of single adults, and we've chosen to do worship in a certain style because of who we're trying to reach, and we've chosen to approach prayer ministry and women's ministry and these kind of things in a specific way because of who we're trying to reach. And so, like, in a beautiful scenario, you've got, you know, people in the church, on staff, key volunteers going the same direction. Every now and then you get a situation where you have no idea how it happened, but someone's just like, wow, how did they miss that? They went through the whole membership thing and they still are going the complete opposite direction. These usually are pretty easy to deal with because they're so obvious. But every now and then you have a volunteer that's just like, you know, 3 degrees off on probably one area. You know, so often it would just be like their pet thing. And usually it has something to do with their church baggage, something, you know, they came from another church that did, let's say, prayer ministry in a certain way. And so they're coming and they're just harping because we need to do prayer ministry this way because this is what works and this is what God blesses. And so, you know, it starts out as kind of a preference or methodology thing, and then it becomes like, well, this is a spiritual issue, that they're making it kind of a spiritual issue. A lot of times the crooked arrow is having conversations around the church and with all their networks. This happens a lot of times with worship issues, the level, the volume in the auditorium, women's ministry and what we do or don't do, men's ministry. It's like, we just don't do enough for men's ministry. Small groups. I had a crooked arrow in my church who, if every single thing in our church didn't lead to an invitation to get people in small groups, he would have nothing of it. It would be worthless for him. We had a situation where the lead pastor on a weekend, and we would typically know ahead of time if he's going to do this. On this particular weekend, he did a physical invitation in the church where people kind of, you know, he led them to Christ and he had them come forward. We hardly ever did that, but we did it in this certain time. And he just in the moment with the Spirit, he just did it. And we didn't have any follow-up plan, and we didn't know it was coming. So it was kind of a little bit clunky and wasn't great follow through. But we had like 250 people in a given weekend, you know, come and say, I'm in. I want to follow Christ. First time making this decision. This guy got so angry, yelled at me after the service because we didn't get those people instantly into small groups. And I'm like, Dave, I totally get it, and we should have done better, and we should have had a follow up, and we didn't know it was coming, and you're right on that. But 250 people, you know, made a decision. They moved. Something moved in their spiritual life. We don't know exactly what it was, but something moved. They made progress in their spiritual life. But he couldn't see it. He was focused on his agenda item. Most of the time, too, these guys, when they come to you, somewhere in the conversation, they'll say, you have no idea how many people agree with me on this issue. Like when you find out, you're going to be amazed. Or they'll say, I don't know why everyone talks to me about this, but for some reason, people just come and they talk. I mean, a lot of people come and talk to me about this.
Well, it's because they're like a cesspool of gossip. You know, they're like the dumping ground of gossip for that topic. So those conversations really have to happen when they're like that. When they're, I call those like, maybe attitude, but a lot of it's alignment. They're just not aligned with the church. And maybe 90% of the church they agree with, but they have their one thing. And so those conversations you have to tackle with grace. I like, especially the initial conversation, I like to listen. Tell me. I want to hear. I want to, you know, is there a kernel of truth in there we as a church need to know and grow from? You know, what is there in there that we can learn from? But then it's like, okay, no. I mean, I totally get where you're coming from. That's great. There's nothing wrong with that. That's where we are as a church, because we're going this way because we're reaching these people. Yeah. So I think, you know, how big is the church? What size?
6,000.
Okay. I think where what I like to do in those kind of areas is celebrate the entrepreneurship, celebrate the way God's wired them. Everything that they do doesn't have to be under the umbrella of the church. So, you know, if there's a way to create space for fanning the flames of just what God's put in, the kind of the missional impulse that God's put in their heart, that doesn't necessarily have to be under the umbrella of the church. And is hopefully, and as long as it's not against the values of the church, and typically it's not. But sometimes the frustration I've found with men or women like that is they think we should do it as a church, and really they think you should do it as a church because this is a great idea and you should do it and you should find some people to do it. Well, you know, it's like that's not helpful, and you have those kind of conversations. But you should do this, and we'll celebrate it. And if you can provide some space for that to get some exposure so they can get some people to come alongside them. Because I get it, you know, you're sitting in the church and it's like, I got this thing going and I love my church, but I got this thing in my heart, and you don't want to feel like my church just is completely shutting it down all the time. I wouldn't consider that necessarily an alignment issue.
Okay.
I mean, sometimes it is. Right. Sometimes they want to start something because they don't like what we're doing. But a lot of times that's just something. God's put something in their heart, and trying to figure out a way to celebrate it without becoming responsible for it. So when they go to the next idea, we have all the pieces that we have to pick up. We're kind of out of time. So any other last comments, questions, thoughts? That came from Jack Welch, who was the CEO of GE. Trying to remember what it's called. If you Google... probably values and performance, and Jack Welch, if I find it. My last, so I did number 10. This was 10, which is tackle alignment. Number 8 was pay well, which we don't have time to talk about. And number 9 is count the cost before hiring a family member. Count the cost before hiring a family member. Because it can be messy. I'll stay up here and hang around if anyone wants to ask any more questions. But to honor the time, I should let you guys go.